I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Welcome to the Jillian Michaels and Janice Show. Oh, did you see how fluid that was?
That was nice.
I want to be clear that the rule for I like, it's like, and you know, still stands.
Okay.
I bought you a taser.
I thought you did very well last week.
Thank you. I thought I did too. I was a little self-conscious. I was paying attention to, you know, I felt like I was watching myself from above, so to speak.
Man.
But I think that I did well. Yeah. Yeah. So, I want to talk about my new book.
Yeah. You've been signing a few autographs and kissing babies lately, haven't you?
I've been shaking some hands.
Yeah.
I'm running for office. The reason, in all truthfulness, I've been doing these book signings and people have been asking me questions about the book. Because I am not able to be doing book signings across the country in the way that I would like, I appreciate that there are many questions about this book that I am not able to answer personally one-on-one. So I wanted to address a little bit about the message behind Unlimited and the three steps that the book is based upon. So Unlimited is my first, quote, self-help book. And I wish I could find a different name for that category because it just sounds so, the minute you hear self-help, it's like, ugh, bleh. It just feels so kind of cheesy, touchy-feely self-help. I don't know how else to categorize it. I really don't. And the reality is that we need to redefine what self-help means. It simply means getting out of your own way. That's what it means. Mm. Finding the ways, uncovering the ways in which you're self-destructive, and then managing those behaviors and making different choices, getting out of your own way. And that's what this book is about, because I don't need to write another diet book. I don't need to write another fitness book. I can't reinvent the wheel. Everything that I've put in the market on those categories, I believe in 100%. I think that information is as current and as rock solid as it could possibly be in this moment in time with the science that we have today. So how come if it takes me 5 minutes to teach people about calories and 5 minutes to teach them how to do a crunch or a lunge, why is it that 2 out of 3 adults are obese? Why is it that 1 in 3 of our children are overweight? And forget weight. Because Unlimited is not about weight. It's about building, subtitle, building an exceptional life. So how come so many people are waking up in the morning just barely getting through the day? And I know you're out there. And it's unacceptable. It's not about surviving your life. You get one, as far as we know, and it's about thriving. It's about taking the experience of your life to its apex. Max this sucker out. You should be happy. You should experience happiness in your job, in your relationships, with your family, with your physical health. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we don't have certain limitations in that we're not always going to get what we want. I'm not going to be able to run for president of the United States and get elected. It would not happen. But it's kind of like that Rolling Stones song. You get what you need. And when you put the right information in the world with your positive intentions, the right thing is going to come back to you. And although it may not look the way you planned, it may not be, I'm president of the United States, I'm the leader of the free world. Maybe not. But you will get the opportunity that's right for you. And that's in alignment with your authenticity and your true calling. When you stand in your truth about how you get in your own way and you take the steps and do the work to change it. So the reason I wrote Unlimited is because I was seeing so many people barely getting by, surviving, not thriving. And there's just no reason for it. There are people in this world that have happiness. There are people in this world who are doing a job that they love, who have their physical health, who are in healthy relationships. And I say to you, why not you? I've asked this question of you before, and I'm asking it of you again, and I'm going to keep asking it of you until you're all happier, healthier people. Because there's no reason that you don't deserve to be just as happy as anybody else in this world. The only difference between the haves and the have-nots is that the people that have the things in life that they want recognize that they deserve it, and they have the skill set to achieve it. That's what's missing. People don't have the skills to achieve the things they want in life. So they go out and they get really excited and really pumped up. They might have a moment of inspiration. They were inspired by something and they take action without the proper information and the proper skill set. Inevitably, it's either ineffective or even potentially harmful, the action that they take. And they get discouraged and we go back to a place of, oh my gosh, I knew I couldn't do it. I tried and I failed. I'm a failure. And it begets that old story and that pattern. I'll use diet, for example. A lot of people will get inspired, pumped up. They're like, I'm going to lose the weight. I'm going to do it. Well, they don't educate themselves properly. They don't have a coach. They don't have the tools. They don't have the skill set. They don't understand why they were overeating in the first place. But they just jump into the fray and they might do something stupid like the HCG diet or the cabbage soup diet or the Master Cleanse diet. Or they may fall into one of the old fad diets from the 90s where they're cutting out a macronutrient like I'm on the fat-free diet or I'm on the no-carb diet, which are all antiquated dinosaurs that create biochemical havoc on your metabolism. So if they do lose some weight, they're going to gain it back. They're going to damage their metabolism. They'll lose the weight and gain it all back. And then it's like, I can't lose weight. I knew I couldn't lose weight. I'm such a loser. I'm doomed to be fat. And it's like, no, you didn't have the information and you didn't have the tools. So that rule applies to everything in life. The book is broken down into three sections. The first part of the book is called Imagine. And the reason is because if you cannot cultivate your passion and stand in your truth, how will you ever know what it is that you want? If you don't have a clear vision of what it is that you want to go after, how will you ever get there? It's sort of like the difference between saying, I want to go northeast versus I'm going to the Empire State Building. I can map my way to the Empire State Building, but northeast, what the hell does that mean? That's like saying, I want to be healthy. What does that mean to you? What does it look like? Does it mean that you live to be 100? Does it mean that you see your grandchildren's children graduate from college, get married? Does it mean that you're wearing a two-piece at your 20th wedding anniversary? What does it mean? What does it look like? What does it feel like? You need to form an emotional attachment to these goals. You need to have a connection to them. Because I got to tell you, achieving them is going to be work. But there's a great quote that I love. It's from Twilight of Idols by Nietzsche. I love to quote Nietzsche because I feel like it makes me look smart.
It does. I'm very excited about this quote.
Thank you. And he says basically, I can't remember it verbatim, so I'm going to...
So you're paraphrasing.
I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. But he says, if you have a why to live for, you can tolerate anyhow. And what that means is that if there is a reason, if there's something that you want, if you have an emotional connection to something, you'll do the work to achieve it. So when I'm on the treadmill and I hate it, or when I'm having, you know, grilled salmon and everyone else is having pizza, I do that because my health is important to me. My skinny jeans matter to me. Occasionally, I would like to have sex with the lights on. And I know that if I don't feel good about my body, it's going to be pitch black in that room. I do want to have kids. I want to meet my kids' kids one day. I think about these things. I form an emotional connection to these goals. And then from that crystallized vision, I now have an emotional connection that's worth fighting for and doing the work. And I go, okay, I know I want specifically these things. Now let me figure out exactly what I need to do in order to achieve them. And I can plot a roadmap, so to speak, of things that need to be accomplished to make those dreams a reality. So the first step is learning how to crystallize a vision, how to form an emotional connection to that vision. Let's say that you go, I don't know what I want to do, because I've had that conversation before.
That's 98% of the population.
I don't know
what I want to do.
I get it. And I think a big part of that is because we've been socialized to stop dreaming, to believe that life is a series of responsibilities. We have to do this. It's the responsible thing. I have to take that job. I have to make money. You don't get to do what you love and make money. That's not how the world works, which is a crock of crap. And a lot of people are afraid if they dream and their dreams don't come true, they won't be able to survive the disappointment. So they go into this place of becoming sort of numb. We put one foot in front of the other and we shut off all the parts that are feeling dissatisfied and overwhelmed and unhappy, because no one can go through life like that. So we turn those emotions off. But when you turn your emotions off, you turn everything off. You don't systematically shut off discontent. No. When you numb something, you numb the whole thing. When you get a shot of Novocaine, you don't feel anything, not the good, not the bad. And what we need to do is start sitting in the present moment, paying attention and taking inventory to our feelings as we go through our life, our day, our routine. When you wake up in the morning and you have coffee versus tea, which one makes you happier? You know, when you find, you know, and in the book I teach you, I run you through a series of questions about, you know, being very conscious, thinking about when you're happy and when you're not happy, what choices you're making that are working out for you, which choices you're making that aren't working out for you, looking at the things that you love to do, when you lose time, what your natural abilities have been. Do you like volunteer work? You know, are you good with groups? Are you better on a solo environment? Where you can really start to look at and analyze and evaluate your natural tendencies, your likes, your dislikes, but we don't think about it. We don't pay attention, nor do we think we have the time. And so many of us find it trivial. But the reality is that Martha Stewart started out making cookies in her basement after she failed as a stockbroker. Coco Chanel was a seamstress, okay, with no formal education in design or fashion. She was an orphan and a seamstress. You know, I was a 17-year-old that was training for my black belt when someone saw me in the gym and asked me if I was a fitness trainer. And I lied and said, sure, yeah, because I thought it would be easy money. And then when you recognize, you know something, I love doing this. At that point, you can start to say, I love doing this. How do I make a career out of it? And then we move into the next two steps of the book. The second one is believe. Now, this was a really tricky thing because the third part of the book is called Achieve. And it's very difficult. They sort of go hand in hand. I couldn't figure out which part of the book to put first. Should it be action and then believe? Or should it be believe and then action? Because the truth of the matter is, you will only achieve what you believe. If you cannot buy into your potential and your ability and those achievements in your heart and in your head, it will not happen. It won't. And while many self-help books will tell you what to achieve, oh, stop beating yourself up. Just love yourself more. The reality is that a moment of positivism is not going to reverse a lifetime of negative thinking, of being, you know, having negative things projected upon you by other people. You have to experience a positive reality to buy into it. And that's where the action part of the book is so critical, because with the right tools, you'll be able to have small successes. You'll be able to achieve these small goals, and slowly but surely, you'll be able to believe in your ability to achieve the bigger goals, because you've now experienced a world where you're a successful human being. This is one of the things I do on Biggest Loser all the time. This is what I've always used the gym for. I use the gym to redefine somebody's self-image and their belief in their capabilities. So they come there and their story is, I'm fat, I'm lazy, I'm weak, I'm all these things. But I get them in the gym. I force them to do a two-hour workout. I get them to run a mile. I get them to do their first push-up. I get them to do their first pull-up. And suddenly, it's like, oh my God, who am I? Who is this person? I never knew that I had this capability. I never had any idea I was this strong in these ways. So now that you've redefined their self-image with fitness, they're already opening the door in every other facet of their life. If I can do that, what else am I capable of that I didn't know was possible? Because they've experienced a reality where they are strong, they are capable, they are successful. So action is a very critical piece in building that belief in yourself. Those two steps work hand in hand. But I was talking to a good friend the other day. I'm going to give you another example of a platitude and why so many self-help books don't work. My friend went to see a very well-known self-help guru who shall remain nameless. And this woman was talking about finding your true direction in life. And my friend was like, I feel like I'm spinning in all these different directions. I'm constantly, you know, I'm spinning like a top out of control, and I'm never going to find that direction, like a magnet. Okay, she was talking about magnets and how magnets, you know, find their true direction and they point north. And my friend was saying, like, you know, I feel like I'm spinning. And the guru says, well, you know what magnets do before they find their true direction? They spin. And I thought, what a crock of bull crap. The reason she's spinning is because when she was a child, she was taught early on that if she ever spread her wings and found her true direction, that she would be shamed for being, you know, too big for her britches, for making everybody else in the family look small. So she finds these things to distract herself, to keep her away from her true calling, because she feels like if she ever reaches her true calling, it will mean abandonment from her family on a psychic reality, in her psychic reality of being a child. That's the answer. But no one ever tells you that in these self-help books. You have to get to the bottom of why you are being self-destructive. And again, it's a journey of self-discovery.
Right, because it can't happen. That stuff cannot happen. Just go,
reason. No, you have to be asking the right questions. You have to be looking in the right places. So in the book, I teach you, okay, how are you being destructive in your life? Where have you recognized these patterns before? When do you recognize them starting before? Have you seen this pattern in your family in the following ways? And you learn to identify where these things come from. Because when you understand where they come from, then you're able to manage them and build recovery behaviors. You need to become aware of why you're doing what you're doing, and then have the tools to redirect that energy in a positive direction. So building that belief in your capabilities, asking the right questions, going on a journey of self-discovery, and then in conjunction with taking action, deliberate, specific action, so you experience small successes over time, is what's going to build up that self-esteem. And then, of course, it's learning how to change your attitude about failure, how to change your attitude about anxiety, how to change your attitude about shame. All of those things require a specific attitude adjustment and a different point of view. And we've talked a lot about, for example, failure on the show. A lot of people will see failure in life as, oh my God, I failed, I'm a loser, I knew it, my hope is dashed, I'll never be a success. And failure validates that internal story of, you know, I can't do it. Whereas what failure truly is an opportunity for learning. That's all that it is. Failure is an entry point for learning. And anybody who has healthy self-esteem knows that. So they're able to pass through a failure, look at it and go, what did I learn? What can I do better? What is the meaning of this? Bring a meaning to it and transcend into tremendous success. If you look at anybody that you admire in this life, I guarantee you they will have massive failures. I'll take Susie Orman, for example. Susie Orman was a waitress at the Buttercup Bakery until she was 30 years old, making $400 a week, getting C's all through college. She had to piece together her degree. Everyone told her she was stupid. She never believed in herself. At 30, she decides she's going to open up her own restaurant. So all her customers have rallied around her. They give her $50,000. They tell her to put it in a money marketing account at Merrill Lynch until she figures out the next steps to open her restaurant. This is 1980. So the guy that invested all the money, he lost all $50,000. So now she's a 30-year-old waitress with her dream of opening a restaurant being shattered who's now $50,000 in debt to her customers. What does she do? She brings meaning to it. She gets a job at Merrill Lynch because she says, well, you know what? At $400 a month, I'm not going to be able to pay these guys back this $50,000. She takes a job at Merrill Lynch making $1,500 a month. She's the only woman in the Oakland office among 100 men. She learns the business. She reads a clause about, you know, that the broker who had invested her money and lost it had broken the law because you can't invest money in a certain way for somebody that can't afford to lose the money. She sues Merrill Lynch. She gets the $50,000 back plus interest. And at that point now, she's the sixth highest grossing broker in the company. And Susie Orman, America's money guru, was born out of tragedy, out of the ashes. I left fitness training. I wanted to became a motion picture agent at a place called ICM in Hollywood, big Hollywood agency. I got fired after busting my butt for 3 years, fired because I got caught in this political nightmare between these two big agents, and I'm out of the business. I'm blackmailed out of the business. What does it do? It forces me back into fitness training, and now I'm doing what I always should have been doing, what my passion is, what I truly love, because I looked at that situation, I learned the lessons, I allowed the divine intervention to come in, I had faith in my path and in myself and who I was, I learned from that failure, and Jillian Michaels, the fitness guru, was born. So, my point is, you need to learn how to manage things like fear, anxiety, shame, worry. It's an attitude adjustment, but you need the tools to do that. That is how you learn to believe in yourself. The third part, the action part, and this is where The Secret pisses me off, because I do talk a little bit about the law of attraction, and, you know, I get a little kooky in the beginning of the book. I'm willing to indulge in the fact that, you know, we all have a vibration. The energy that you and I are made up of is the same energy that makes up the universe. But the reality is that if you don't bring action to that intention, it's not going to happen. While we all deserve happiness, let me be clear. You're not entitled to happiness. You're entitled to earn it. You're entitled to achieve it. And what scares me about that type of entitlement that The Secret implies is that, you know, when you think I'm entitled to happiness, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to, you know, think money and it's going to show up. Well, when it doesn't, you're going to be discouraged. And it's like a diet that doesn't tell you to count calories. It's an easy sell. Think money and it shows up. It doesn't tell you you got to work your ass off to make that money. You can make the money, but you got to do the work. So bringing action to your intentions and believing in your ability to achieve those actions, to do the actions necessary, is the complete equation. And the type of skills that you apply in the action section, where it's educating yourself about the goal, because when you're informed, you make powerful choices that are going to lead to a powerful positive outcome. Just like the diet analogy I gave you, if you have the proper information about diet and you pursue weight loss in the proper fashion, you will be successful. Every single contestant on The Biggest Loser that ever came to me and told me, I've tried everything, I can't lose weight. Really, there wasn't one I wasn't able to take weight off of. Not one. Not one out of the hundreds that I've worked with. Not one. Because I use the proper information. It's information. It's learning to control your environment. It's learning to express your needs. It's working on communication skills. It's learning how to recognize and constantly reevaluate your behavior. Even like what we were talking about where I said, you know, I listened to the show. I don't like when I did X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to work on it. It's evaluating your own behavior. It's being brave enough to look at your own mistakes. It's having a mentor, somebody that can help you practice differently. So, for example, a lot of people think if I practice over time, I'm going to get the result that I want. Couldn't be less true. If you practice and you practice and you practice, but you don't have feedback while you're practicing, all you're going to do is ingrain the same mistakes. The way you practice is critical. So we take golf, for example. Tiger Woods does something called specific practice. In the book, I call it target practice. So let's say Tiger has a problem hitting a ball out of a sand trap from a specific angle with a specific golf club. And he hits the golf club over and over and over, and all he does is make the same mistakes. And you form these little grooves, these passageways in your brain. So when you do the wrong thing over and over and over again, you're just ingraining a bad habit. You're actually making it worse. But if Tiger is videotaping himself and he has a coach there, and the coach says, here's your problem. You're not twisting your hip at the right angle, and you got to, you know, grab, I don't know anything about golf, but you got to grab the club a little bit lower, and then now try the shot. and then he makes the shot. That's how you improve. Specific practice, not hours of repeating the same mistakes.
But it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be incredibly uncomfortable.
You're absolutely right. It's incredibly uncomfortable. But here's the payoff. If you have that connection to your goal, when you get to your target weight, when you, you know, in your relationship, when you express your needs, I want to die every time I need to express my needs in my relationship. I want to jump off of a cliff. I hate it so much. It is so uncomfortable for me. I feel like my skin is crawling. But I know that if I don't do that, resentment's going to build. And that lack of communication is going to be corrosive and erode my relationship. And the very thing that I'm afraid of, which is losing that person, being vulnerable in that situation, I'm going to manifest.
Yeah.
So I turn around, I express my needs in a responsible way. I don't attack. I don't say, when you do this, I feel that. I turn around and say, you know, I've been feeling a little insecure when you go out with your friends and you don't invite me. And, you know, it has nothing to do with... It's nothing that you're doing wrong. It's just, I feel like, you know, you don't want me there. It's totally different than saying, you're an idiot. And when you don't invite me, you're inconsiderate. Totally different. So learning not only to express your needs, but how to express your needs so that you can effectively communicate with somebody. These are skills. These are skills. And when you have the skills, your life will change. So when you go about transforming any facet of your life, you need all three sets of skills from imagine, believe, and achieve. There, I touched on it. I feel like I did up the broad strokes of it.
And no, you did. And I've been jotting down a lot of notes, and we got a lot to talk about during the break.
Well, you need some serious help.
Well, I didn't want to slow the segment down because you're on a roll, but you know, I've got some serious questions.
Well, I mean, that's no secret, Janice.
You know, we got to take a little breather here.
I'm sure we do.
Yeah.
All right, cue the music.
Beautiful girls all over the world. I could be chasing, but my time would be wasted. They got nothing on you, baby.
Yeah.
Nothing on you, baby.
Nothing on you, baby. Nothing on you. I know you feel where I'm coming from. Regardless of the things in my past that I've done. Of it really was for the hell of the fun. On a carousel, so around I spun. With no direction, just trying to get some. Trying to chase skirts, living in the summer sun. And so I lost more than I had ever won. And honestly, I ended up with none.
Okay, we're back, and now we're going to be here with a friend of mine, Mark Izzo. I met Mark when I was invited to go to Post Foods about a month or so ago to talk to them about the changes that they're making with their products. The struggles they face in changing the products in our current economic climate and with our federal policies, and of course the options that are out there for people that we simply aren't choosing. And so I'm extremely excited to welcome Mark to the show. Mark, how are you?
Great.
Can you tell, your credentials are staggering. Will you please tell people your credentials and what you do at Post Foods?
Sure, thanks. I've been in the food industry for about 20 years. I've worked for many different types of companies in the food industry, both those that produce the ingredients that go into the foods that we eat every day, as well as the companies that manufacture the foods that we eat every day, like Post Foods that makes such popular cereal brands as Grape Nuts and Shredded Wheat and Honey Bunches of Oats and Great Grains. So I've done that for many, many years. I have a PhD in food science and nutrition. People joke that I'm kind of a doctor of food, so I know a lot about all aspects of what goes into food, how it's made. I also have degrees in biochemistry, so I understand the, what happens in your body when the food is processed and the various health benefits that it gives you. And I have a real passion for food and nutrition. As a matter of fact, I was actually pre-med when I was in college, and I decided I wanted to go into the food industry to try and prevent more of the bad things that can happen to you rather than get involved later in the game and cure them being a physician. So kind of a doctor of food, so to speak, and trying to practice a lot of preventative medicine through the food industry.
I have to say that I've now been fortunate enough to have a couple meetings with some of the bigger food companies, which is unusual, but you are the first who has agreed to come onto the show, talk to the listeners, tell them what's going on in the industry, be transparent, And that is, first of all, I just want to say that's so respectable. And it makes it my job so much easier because it's like I go in, we talk, you tell me what you're doing, and then I'm supposed to disseminate that information and convey it to the people listening. And for you to come on and do that, I have to tell you, is so admirable, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, obviously, our food system is not perfect yet, clearly. But it's a collaboration of us as consumers making the right choices and giving the food companies the tools to help us help ourselves. So, you know, you had said something that I really loved about how, you know, look, we inherited the current system based on, you know, what was put into place back in the 50s and the 60s when they had a lack of information about food. And can you tell me a little bit about the changes that you guys are making over there, what's important to post? And about some of the hurdles of making these changes, because I think people, you know, and I have to admit, I'm guilty of this, Mark. I used to say, like, why not? Why can't you just change this? Why can't you just take it out? You know, I don't understand. And then, of course, when I got an education about the process of changing something and the manufacturing and the legalities behind it, it changes your perspective and it invites a little more patience, I think, from the consumer. So can you elaborate on that stuff?
Absolutely. And you know, I think it cuts to the core of what we do every day as an industry and the economic piece of it. You know, as an advocate for nutrition, we get out and we speak to many, many people, thought leaders in the nutrition area. You've heard a lot about the government's policies and the, you know, childhood obesity in particular. Everybody knows that we have a big problem. So we at Post really want to be fellow travelers in changing that system and making it better. As Jillian did note, all of us in today's world inherited our world from the generation before us. So back in the, you know, 40s and the 50s, you know, we're putting a lot of different types of things in food. That's when cereal was first taken and sugar was added to cereal. Before that, it was really just plain cereal. Back, the original cereals were products like Post shredded wheat and Post grape nuts that have no sugar added to them at all.
Right.
So as marketers began to add sugar to cereal, it is fascinating. Cereal tasted better. So sales of cereal, you know, shot way up there, and they're the products that are out there today. And the unsweetened category of cereal, it's fascinating, has actually been declining in consumption. So the cereals are still out there. Again, Post shredded wheat, Post grape nuts, great examples of cereals that contain no sugar at all.
Right.
The sales of those products have been steadily, you know, decreasing over time and being replaced by products that are pre-sweetened. So what I always tell people is we kind of inherited the industry. One of the things that we're doing that we're very active at on the Post end is slowly taking the sugar content down in many of our products. And a great example of that product is Pebbles. We make Post Fruity Pebbles, Post Cocoa Pebbles, great tasting products. Kids love them. And we have consistently been decreasing the sugar content in those cereals from, you know, 14 grams where they were quite a while ago, down to 12 grams, down to 11 grams, down to 10 grams. And we're constantly doing that. And when you have a big brand like Pebbles, what you've got to do is we give the consumers what they want. The consumer's our boss.
Mm-hmm. That's what I love the most about that when you said that. You're like, look, you can come in here all day long and I can tell you all the products we make that have exactly what you want in them. But the consumer is the boss and they're not buying it.
Exactly.
I love when you said that because
exactly.
I was like, all right, so, you know, now I got to lay the smack down on the listeners.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's great. We were recently out at the Yale University has a Rudd Center of Nutrition, and they are really thought leaders in childhood nutrition and obesity prevention. And they asked us, you know, why don't kids eat more shredded wheat? And my response to them was, well, we would love for kids to eat more post-shredded wheat. We're very proud of it. It's nothing but whole grain shredded wheat berries. It's loaded with natural fiber, natural antioxidants. As a matter of fact, it has your entire days of whole grain in one serving. So if you as parents out there can get your kids to eat shredded wheat, which is obviously not a tremendously high taste type product, but great
right.
ways to get them to eat that is by letting them make it their own, letting them customize it, let them add their own fresh fruit, their own honey if they'd like, their own type of brown sugar, you know, you name it, their own yogurt on top.
Cinnamon.
So that can make it, yes, yeah, cinnamon can make it very, very fun and can give those parents out there who are very concerned with, you know, what their kids are eating every day, can give them a huge way to make a difference in their kids' lives. So that's a simple thing. I've I've talked to people out there in the market who tell me that their kids love grape nuts, believe it or not. If you've ever had grape nuts, extremely kind of
I grew up with
product.
Grape nuts. Whenever my dad used to yo-yo with his weight. And whenever he was trying to lose weight, he would have grape nuts and a grapefruit for breakfast.
Absolutely.
So I grew up knowing that, like, that was the healthy choice.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's like, you're right, you don't see it as much. It's not getting as much shelf space at the supermarkets, you know, because we are not buying it, and they're going to give the products that are selling the most shelf space. And but here's something I want to go back for 1 second. You were telling me with Pebbles, you guys have been incrementally in little pieces dropping the sugar. And I think you said it went from 14, it's now 9 grams.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've heard this before, this stealth health concept of gradually reducing the sodium, gradually reducing the sugar. Can you tell me, because, you know, the consumer doesn't understand that concept. Can you tell me why the gradual?
The reason we do that, and there's a great example, we gradually reduce the sugar and the sodium in products to get the consumer to improve their health habits without leaving eating the product altogether. Because if they don't buy the product, then we haven't done the consumer any good at all, and we could have left the sugar where it was. Right. So a great example of this is a number of years ago, Post took Post Alphabets. Everybody knows Alphabets been out there for a number of years. Now,
yeah.
Alphabets has about 10 grams of sugar in it. So what we did as a company was we took Alphabets from 10 grams of sugar, and we took it down to no sugar. We took all the sugar out of Alphabets. And this is an example of what will happen when you try and change too quickly on the consumer, because they're not used to that taste. Everybody just stopped buying Alphabets, believe it or not. It almost killed the brand. And indeed, nowadays, Alphabets, we put the sugar back in. It has about 10 grams of sugar in it now, but it's much more difficult to find than it used to be because we attempted to change it too quickly and the consumer didn't accept it. They stopped buying it. So that's really, that case study that I just gave you on Alphabets is
right.
Really the whole reason for the concept
of
stealth health, because people have to realize we within the food industry, you know, obviously the reason a lot of people go into food science in the first place is we're very passionate about health and nutrition. But if we change products too much, the consumer doesn't buy them, all that causes is that, you know, the companies, you won't have jobs anymore.
Companies go out of business.
You're out of business. Yep. You're not a factor anymore. So you've got to, I tell people, we've got to stay in the game. We've got to make the changes slowly, improve public health, give people options.
Right.
And, you know, another thing I love to bridge over to in our conversation a bit is that there's a lot of great things about cereal in particular that we as an industry can't really tell the consumer because
the health claims. I love when you talk to me about this. Right. So it's very difficult for you guys to market the healthier products because you're not allowed to make health claims on the boxes.
Right. There are certain truths about cereal and whole grain cereal in particular, that it reduces your incidence of obesity. It reduces your incidence of diabetes, of cancer, of heart disease, all the main things that basically lead to health problems in this country, whole grain cereal will decrease all those things. The studies are out there from very reputable universities like Harvard and things like this. The big issue is that the way that our regulatory system is set up in this country, and it's set up to protect the consumer, is that you cannot claim that foods can treat, mitigate, prevent a disease.
Right.
So that's why you don't see any kind of these communications on package, because you're not allowed to do that. If it does those things, it becomes a drug and it's a very different thing.
Okay.
But we all know that foods can be very, very healthy. They actually do certainly impact your health. They impact the incidence of how you get sick, disease, things like this.
I think food should be your medicine. I've always said that. I think that when you eat properly, your food should naturally help your body function in the ways that it's meant to. But you're right. It's extremely difficult to take a cereal that's out there that, you know, doesn't taste as great as one with more sugar in it. And when you can't list the benefits of the product, it's a tougher sell. But
exactly.
If you could turn around and say, look, this cereal is going to help you with, you know, diabetes, heart disease, regulating digestion, when you can say all that stuff, Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot sexier to the consumer to make the healthier choice.
Exactly. So we have to depend on one-on-one education, just like we're doing right now, and thought leaders like yourself to bring the message forward that, you know, there are certain types of food that are very, very, very health-promoting and indeed will help you reduce your incidence of getting these different chronic diseases. So you have to get the word out there by word of mouth, by print, by, you know, radio like we're doing now, podcasts and things like that. And then, because you're right, shredded wheat, grape nuts, if you're going to eat those type of products all the time, they are not going to be as high on the taste spectrum. And it is, some people will view that as, well, you have to realize there's that discipline there, and it's worth
exactly.
something. It's worth a lot, that discipline.
That's the thing. So I also want to come back to you, though. This is was important to me. You were telling me about the changes you guys were making, dropping the sodium, dropping the sugar, but you also have removed all high fructose corn syrup from your products.
That's correct.
That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. That to me is really important because sugar in moderation, that's one thing. But something like high fructose corn syrup is different than sugar because it's metabolized by the liver, correct? And I was wondering if you could explain. So then when you see corn syrup versus high fructose corn syrup, there's been a lot of confusion for people about what's the difference. And I was wondering if you could explain the difference for us, since you will do it obviously far better than I could with all your PhDs.
Sure. So high fructose corn syrup really came onto the market a number of years ago as a way to actually use less sugar, believe it or not. The beverage industry first hooked into this because fructose, which is what's in high fructose corn syrup, is sweeter than sucrose, which is sucrose or dextrose, which are sucrose is table sugar, dextrose is what's in regular corn syrup.
Right.
So it came out of the market a number of years ago. The whole beverage industry pretty much went over to it because it allowed them to use a little bit less sugar, and it also was therefore a cost reduction. So it was very, very popular, and everybody thought this was a positive thing when we did it. When you look back and you look at this science that we call food science and nutrition, people are always trying to do good things. They're always trying to, you know, get a better tasting, better quality product to the consumer. And when they put in high fructose corn syrup, that's what they were doing. They had no indication that it might be processed differently by the body.
Right.
So what really happened, though, is through the years, and high fructose corn syrup was used widely in the food industry. It's only now that it's the tide's beginning to turn and a lot of big companies are taking out. So it's used very widely in the food industry. It made people begin to question, hey, if we have, you know, so much high fructose corn syrup in here, the incidence of obesity is going up. Could there be any link?
Right.
So people began to do studies, and I must say that there's a lot of scientific debate over the role of fructose and obesity, but studies do show that fructose is metabolized differently in the body than the glucose is, or the dextrose. Glucose and dextrose are two names for the same molecule. Basically what happens is the fructose goes to your liver.
Thank you.
And in your liver, it can be converted into fat if you're taking in excess calories.
Right.
And that is where there's the hesitancy to use too much high fructose corn syrup in products now, because when you're taking in an excess of calories, it may make it easier for that high fructose corn syrup to be converted into fat in your liver.
Than regular sugar, which is metabolized by every cell in the body, right?
Exactly. Regular sugar is the fuel of every cell in the body. So every cell in the body can take glucose in, but only the liver uses fructose and converts it into fat. So basically that's what happens. That's the difference.
Thank you.
And you have to realize that.
Because it's so confusing for people. They don't understand, and they hear, sugar is sugar. And it's like, no, we believe there's a difference. This is what it is. And then when they see corn syrup, but it doesn't say high fructose corn syrup, that is different than high fructose corn syrup, right? Because it has no fructose. So just corn syrup functions in the body like table sugar.
Correct. And as I explained, corn syrup comes from corn. Corn has starch in it. When the starch is made of chains of sugar, chains of glucose, and that's the stuff that can be used by every molecule in your body. They take starch from corn and they break it down to make syrup. And the first step of that is your regular corn syrup has a lot of glucose in it, and it can be used as a sweetener. Then they take that syrup and they convert it further to change, and they actually change the glucose into the sweeter fructose.
Got it.
And that's called high fructose corn syrup. So high fructose corn syrup is made from corn syrup. It's a further step in processing. High fructose corn syrup then is what Post has committed to take out of all of its products, and all of our products are now sweetened only by normal sugar, which would be corn syrup, or it'll actually say on the label sugar. We also don't use artificial sweeteners in our products, which is something that we have.
That was huge when you guys told me that.
Yeah, there are many companies out there, and even in healthy products, I would encourage people to look at the labels that actually do use sucralose. They'll use aspartame in breakfast cereals. So
yep.
What we've done is made the commitment as a company, we're not going to use artificial sweeteners in our products. And so you won't find a plain shredded wheat product, let's say, that's sweet, but it's artificially sweetened. It just won't exist, because we believe that nature is the best way. When you have something like a grain is fundamentally what we're selling, we want to keep it natural, like it was grown in the field, and we don't believe in adding artificial sweeteners to our products either.
So the lesson here is this, people. You've got to be proactive. You've got to understand the dangers of certain things in your foods, and you've got to understand the health benefits of certain things in their foods, so that you know when it says whole grain, what that means to your body, and you know when it doesn't say that, what it means to your body. You know the difference between artificial sweeteners and natural sugar and high fructose corn syrup and what that does in your body and plain corn syrup and the difference there. And we have to start buying the products out there that are healthier for us. We've got to create a demand for those products so they get the shelf space that they deserve. And it's what Mark said. We've got to be creative. Let your kids customize their cereal. Teach them to put fruit in it. Teach them to put a little bit of raw honey in it. Teach them to put cinnamon in it. Make their own flavor with it. Make it fun for them. We've got to be creative. We've got to think outside of the box. We've got to take responsibility, because it's difficult for me to go in there and have these conversations and then have Mark turn around and go, really? Here's three products that have everything you want. They're perfect. And the people aren't buying them. So
right.
So that's, you know, you've got Mark here to help you get informed, to understand the changes that are being made. And those are big changes. No artificial sweeteners, no high fructose corn syrup. And there's obviously a lot more. We could sit here and go on for hours. The reduction of sodium, the reduction of sugar. And what I love is that, you know, in hearing those changes, I know that people like you, Mark, are out there. You're in charge of these big companies and what's going on with their food. You're a dad. You sat there and you looked at me and said, look, I'm a dad. I care. I'm doing, you know, I inherited this system and I'm doing everything I can to change it as fast as I can change it. But here's my problem. I'm creating these products and people aren't buying them.
Right.
And
you know,
so,
we're constantly trying. And I'm pretty sure that when you were in, Jillian, we actually shared with you a new product that's going to be coming out this summer. It's a new Pebbles product, and it's going to be called Pebbles Boulders. That'll have not as much whole grain as shredded wheat. Shredded wheat, to put it in perspective, will have 49 grams in one bowl. Pebbles Boulders will have 16 grams in one bowl. And what's great about this, too, is the whole family can eat these products, so you can all begin to get healthier together.
Mark, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you again.
Okay, time for a quick call. Pamela is waiting.
Hey, Pamela!
Hey!
How are you, buddy?
Well, I got more pep in my step now.
Aww.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
Thank you.
My idol is calling me. Wow.
Oh, well, thank you, honey. Tell me what's going on.
Well, I have hypothyroidism.
Okay.
And my question to you, I am so diligent. I eat organic. I've eliminated soy from everything in my diet except my chewing gum.
Okay.
And I didn't realize that even the ones that you promote, you know, the dessert delights, they've all got soy.
Wait, no, let me be really clear. I do not promote gum ever. You mean the Biggest Loser?
Okay, well.
But you mean the Biggest Loser, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
let me take this opportunity to be really clear. What the Biggest Loser promotes has nothing to do with me. Nothing. And if you notice, I do not do any of their gum integrations. They're called integrations. They take money from companies and they promote a product on there. The only products I have ever agreed to do on there, and by the way, we do not get paid to do them. unless they do side deals with trainers, of which I have done zero. So the trainers do not get paid to do them. They're a contractual requirement. And the only ones that I have allowed myself to do, I did Cheerios because it has no trans fat, no HFC, no soy, nothing in there. It was just a, you know, clean cereal. And I did a soup for them that also had no MSG, no trans fat, no high fructose corn syrup. That is it. And it's because
of my... So what are your thoughts on chewing gum?
Yeah, I just want to clear that up with you. No, I don't want you to think I'm...
Pam just wants to know if she can chew gum.
I know. I just don't want anybody to think that, you know, there's a huge difference between me and the Biggest Loser. Okay, here's the thing. If you're talking about chewing gum, obviously there are natural chewing gums. I would rather you chew one that doesn't have artificial sweetener in it or artificial color. Or high fructose corn syrup. I think there's one called Spree. I'm not totally sure, but I think it's called Spree, and it's just a natural chewing gum. There's no chemicals in it or anything bad. That would be my favorite option for you. But okay. The soy in the chewing gum, like the soy lecithin, if you're worried about thyroid, that's so minimal. And if you've cut out soy in every other area, that is the least of your concerns. Most importantly, you want to be really mindful of artificial sweetener, high fructose corn syrup, and artificial coloring in the gum. That's the thing you need to look out for.
And that's in all of them.
Not the natural one, not the brand Spree.
I'm pretty sure
it's called Spree.
I buy the value packs of Trident, different flavors, but...
I'd
love to pick up others, but I've not seen that one, so I will have to look, because I am so diligent, and... You know, even with my thyroid disease, I tried to start another 30-day challenge and started reading your book, and I thought, oh, my God, I can't do it. You know, it's like it just levels me. The activity is too much, and I'm thinking I'm never going to be ripped again.
That's not true, and you don't need to start out with I create rigorous programs. Yeah, Ripped in 30 is a rigorous program, but you could do level one. And you could stay on level one of Ripton 30, and you could do that for 30 days, as long as you're being mindful of what you're eating as well. You don't need to start out and go all out. You know what I mean?
What level do you think I did? It was only level one, and I did it and waited 3 days until I could move again.
That's okay. You started somewhere, and you go walking. The fact that you're making effort, the fact that you're getting up and you're moving your body, that's what matters. You don't have to start out and be a super athlete from go. You know, Ripton 30 is an intense program, and if you need to stay on level one and you need to build yourself up to level one, and if you need to do the beginner modifications on level one, that's what you do. And when you're ready, you move on to level two. And when you're ready, you move on to level three. It doesn't have to be over the course of 30 days. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for calling. I will look for Spree gum. Keep up the good work.
Okay. I feel good about it.
I feel good about it, too.
Do you?
Yeah, I feel real good.
You're on fire today.
As you are.
Yeah. But I'm always on fire.
I know.
You've just been smoldering. But today, I'll fuego.
Yeah. Say goodbye.
Peace.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.